I haven't thought about being anywhere else than with the Islanders. So obviously, it's something that we'll have to we'll come about as time goes on. Whatever happens in between now and then, but you know, most importantly, I'm focused on just helping this team get to the playoffs. I think that's where my focus has to be and my attention, and you know, that's my priority.
Sean Tavares after the skate this morning, ahead of the earlier than normal 7 o'clock start 2 hours from now at the Bell Center on game night. Melnick in the afternoon, Mitch Melnick, Mitch Gallo, and Dave Trentadue in for a vacationing Rod Francis. Those playoff chances appear to be, in the moment anyway, kind of slipping away from the Islanders. Pierre Maguire is in St. Louis, same situation with the team there. Let's go.
Hockey insider Pierre Maguire, brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub, with six locations in and around Montreal. YeOldOrchard.com.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How you doing?
I'm good. This is like Christmas in, what are we, February or March? I forget.
Final day of February.
Okay, well, the last day of February. Like Christmas.
Oh, you're in the rink.
I'm back. I'm at the rink, sitting on the bench. I'm jacked up.
Oh, yeah, welcome back. So the Olympics was just a qualifier for the real stuff.
As I said to somebody, the Olympics was outstanding. The women's gold medal game was off the charts great. The rest of the tournament was a higher-end American Hockey League tournament, which is really good hockey, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't the NHL. I'm just excited to be back. And last night was a great night of watching hockey, especially if you had a chance to watch the Winnipeg-Nashville game. That was a phenomenal hockey game. Or you watched the Bruins in Carolina. That was a really good game. But no, I'm just happy to be back. Really happy.
Oh, it's good to have you back. I wish we could watch you. Marie-Philippe Poulin, by the way, will be with Tony Marinaro on the Montreal Forum tomorrow morning. John Tavares is one. We just got off the phone with Gordon Miller a little earlier than normal because his flight's delayed. He's normally with us at 6. And yeah. He says he really admires John Tavares, you know, what he stands for, what he's accomplished, the kind of person he is. Not once has he even remotely come close to bad-mouthing the Islanders as a franchise when perhaps there was an opportunity to do so. And, of course, with Tavares being here, you know what a lot of the questions were. Do you really believe, and I know it's one thing to stay focused when you're trying to get into the playoffs, but do you really think he hasn't thought about where he might be a year from now?
Oh, I think he's thought about it. He wouldn't be a normal human being if he didn't think about it. We all think about different things that could or potentially will happen in our lives down the road. Everybody has to. That's part of being a goal-oriented person. You know, you set goals for yourself and say, in 2 weeks I want to be here, or in a month I want to be there. So you're always thinking down the road. There's no question that's part of it, but I take him at his word. I'm going to tell you this quick John Tavares story. I'll never forget this. We were in Russia back in 2007. John was part of a Super Series team. It was the best under 20 players from Canada playing against the best Russian under 20 players. And Tavares happened to make the team. And I remember the team was practicing at Moscow Wings, where the Air Force used to be. And so we were at the rink, and before the team on the ice, there was figure skating going on, and all those figure skaters left the ice, and they were sitting in the stands. And Brent Sutter was coaching, and he wasn't happy with the practice. He was absolutely apoplectic with the practice. So he put all the players along the boards, a stick length away from the boards. And the first guy he had go down the boards was John Tavares. And every time you went by a guy, that guy had to hit you and hit you into the boards hard. Tavares never complained. He never whined. You know, he was a few years away, obviously, from when he was going to be drafted. Everybody knew he was a superstar. But Brent did it on purpose. He wanted to test him to see just what he had in him. And that told me everything I needed to know about John Tavares. And then later on that year, into 08, the team went back to the Czech Republic and won World Junior Gold in Pardubice. And Johnny was really good in that tournament. And then, obviously, in 09, it was his breakout. Everybody recognized just how great he was in 09 in Ottawa. But that's the John Tavares that I know and I respect, and I totally agree with Gord. He is a man of honor. He is a distinguished worker. He is a proud person. And I know when he says he's proud of being an Islander, he's proud to be an Islander.
It hasn't been too bad. You know, it's not something I worry about so much on a daily basis. Very fortunate to be playing in the NHL and have the opportunity that I have and. And the success that I've been able to have, I mean, a lot of it was credit to people around me, put me in a position to succeed, and a lot of great players I've played with. So I know life's pretty good, so I'm not going to overthink it all the time. I just, like I said, try to stay in the moment.
And of course, Montreal Canadiens fans want to believe that life could be better if he decided to sign with the Canadiens in the offseason. Personally, Pierre, my view of it is, without knowing anything, I'm moving forward here in trying to project what the 18-19 Canadiens are going to look like as if he's not part of the equation. Like, I'm not going to... I like what you always say, manage expectations. Yeah. I hope it happens. It would be fabulous for everybody in the city, but I don't expect it, and I'm not moving ahead like that. How do the Canadiens handle this in that respect?
You've got to be proactive. Super proactive. Have a plan in place. Write it down. Script it perfectly. Make sure there's no holes in your plan. War game it to death. And if the time comes when you have to enact the plan, make sure your letter perfect. So you have to decide. You better know everything you need to know about the man, soup to nuts. Who's involved? Who are the key decision makers? What do you think the contract is? Who does he respect around the league? What's he looking for in a team? What kind of style does he want to play? Oh, you better know all these things. And so if you don't know all those things, you haven't done your due diligence. And that speaks to my theory on this whole league now. You better have a superhighway of hockey information flowing through your front office on a daily basis. If you don't, you will fail in your recruitment of the player or any player. That's just the reality. I'm with you. I think it would be awesome if you were a member of the Montreal Canadiens. I don't know if that will happen. In fact, I think it's more likely than not that when he sits down with Pat Brisson and when he sits down with Scott Malkin and John Ledecky, that they'll figure a way out to keep him with the Islanders. But I don't know that for sure. I felt completely, and you know, with Stamkos, I felt completely and utterly confident that I could be the lone voice in the woods and say he's not leaving Tampa. I was very confident and comfortable telling you that and the listeners that. I can't say the same thing about this. But I would tell you this, I'm just warning you. If he goes to market, Montreal will not be the only team. Everybody knows that. But I would be very wary of two teams if I were Montreal. I'd be very wary of Detroit, and I'd be very wary of Buffalo. I'd be very wary of those two teams.
Well, it's interesting, the teams that are in a similar position where you look at the Canadiens and go, why would a guy who's going to sign probably a second-to-last contract of his life come to a city that is just, in 2 of 3 years, they haven't made the playoffs?
Well, in Detroit, it's pretty apparent where they're trending. They're going to trend up. They're stockpiled with drafts, and they've got prospects. And so, you know, you look at, imagine, I'm just throwing this out there. Imagine him playing with Anthony Mantha. Imagine him playing with Dylan Larkin. Imagine him with Andreas Athanasiou. So you look at those three players, just at the forward position in particular, that's appealing. It's an original six team. They pay U.S. taxes, not Canadian tax. I mean, I can go down the line. You know, you're asking me what should Montreal be doing. They better have an answer for all this stuff that I'm presenting to you right now. They better have a formalized plan of how they're going to do this. I'll give you a case in point. When Chicago was recruiting Artemi Panarin, okay, when they were recruiting Artemi Panarin, you know what one of the first things they did is when they brought him to Chicago? They put him in an empty United Center and put a spotlight on 72 because that's his number. Do you know what the 72 was for? The Chicago Bulls wins in a year. But they had it figured out. The kid was like, wow, they already got my number hanging up there. So there's little things you need. David, I'm telling you a true story. There are little things you need to know, and you got to be plugged in and ready to do this stuff. And I don't, you know, you'd have to ask them what their plan is. I don't know if they'll share it with you, but, you know, they better have a plan.
John Tavares, the Islanders and the Canadiens tonight. Early start, 7:05, Pierre's in St. Louis. We'll get to what's going down with that team, and it's not good, in a couple of minutes on Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690. Mitch?
Pierre, as part of that recruitment plan, do you think they'd be able to utilize Shea Weber and Carey Price? And what kind of influence do you think those two guys could have, considering all the time that they've spent with Hockey Canada?
Well, that those would be two important people to utilize, especially when you consider the success that they've had. You know, Johnny T, especially in Sochi, even though he got hurt there, in the World Cup of Hockey. So that would be, you know, the one reference point where they could say, yes, you know, we were teammates and we did well and this and that. That would be really important. Excuse me. But Mitch Gallo, I think there's more to it than just those guys, because those guys don't make the decisions in terms of who the players are, what's the style of play, you know, what are the financials. Those guys don't make those decisions. So there's a lot that goes in.
Even with John Tavares, as great as he is, the Islanders have struggled, right? I don't know how many playoffs.
Well, you want to know why? Their defense is just not good enough.
And their goaltending.
They overrated their defense, and their goaltending isn't good enough.
Yeah.
But they overrated their defense. Go look at what they did last year at the expansion draft. I shared it with you before the expansion draft. They said that's the one team nobody in the league can figure out. It doesn't mean they did it wrong. It doesn't mean Garcinon and his people did it wrong. But most people in the hockey business were like, what are they doing with their defense? What's going on there? And they overvalued their players. That's, you know, Travis Hamonic's a good example of that. They overvalued him.
Pierre, but even if they should lose Tavares, at least there's an heir apparent there. They still have to address the issues, right?
Yeah.
At least there's an heir apparent.
Yeah.
Here in Montreal, if they don't land Tavares, like, what are they doing? Like Here's a question I have for you. We got the lineup for tonight, right? Andrew Shaw's making his return. He's back after a knee injury. Morgan Riley, not Morgan Riley. That would be wishful thinking.
That would be great.
Yeah, Mike Riley. Making his Habs debut, playing alongside Jordy Benn. But, you know, it's Drouin between Lehkonen and Pacioretty. Presumably, Jonathan Drouin is not playing center next year, right? Like, presumably.
You'd have to ask them. I don't know that. I didn't think he should have played center from the start, but that's, you know where I stood on that.
But why, this deep into the season, is he still playing center if the plan is for him to not play center?
I couldn't tell you. You're hitting on a lot of really good subjects. I don't know the answer to that.
Damn, Pierre.
I know. It's hard to watch from afar, but I don't understand it. But again, maybe the Plekanec deal hastened that. Maybe the injury situation hastened some of that. They obviously haven't been 100% healthy. Everybody knows that. But still, is it a murderer's row of players down the middle? Has it been for a long period of time? The answer is no, it has not. It has not at all. Tavares would provide the spark. Everybody was sparked when Drouin came, and I tried to warn everybody, not a center, needs to play with a center. And I wasn't trying to be rude or a hater. I was just telling the truth. Tavares is different. You bring him there, it's a completely and utterly different thing. Completely and utterly different. He's one of the top 10 players in the league. He's probably one of the top 5 players in the league. He's a completely different kettle of fish. You can't say that about Jonathan Drouin.
So, of course, I know this is going to be a big talking point as far as the lineup tonight, Pierre, because when Nikita Sherbak first got called up, about a month ago, everyone was pumped. They're like, oh, this is great. They're playing him with Drouin and Galchenyuk. He's going to play with offensive-minded players. And things went pretty well for Sherbak, especially at home, which they are tonight. Sherbak's lining up with Fraze and Andrew Shaw on the fourth line. And I'm just thinking, like, what's the point of that?
I agree. But again, I don't know the injury situation. I'm watching it from afar. I don't know. Again, I don't know what the mindset is. Maybe they're trying to get him to play different ways, or maybe they're trying to teach him something. I don't know. That's better served for the coaches there.
Well, right? And again, this is to start the game. Maybe it changes during the game.
I don't know that you got to.
I certainly hope
as the game goes along.
Yeah, I certainly hope we see him on the power play and some offensive situations. Okay, to the team, you're in their rink tonight, St. Louis. I was curious to see how they'd respond in light of Braden Shen's comments post the trade deadline. When they moved Stastny to Winnipeg, got a first-round pick, but didn't get anything to add considering where they are in the standings. Was what happened last night, they got beat up 8-3 by Minnesota, was that a direct result of how the players felt as a result of what went down at the trade deadline?
Sure looked like it. I can't say that the players have said that on the record, but it sure looked like it. Jake Allen got pulled again. He wasn't very good. I watched him practice this morning. He was on the ice with Patrick Berglund and Chris Thorburn. He looked shaky, and I'm being as polite as possible. You know, Jim Corsi's not the goalie coach here anymore. Jim Corsi did good work with this team. They replaced him, and they haven't found a way to really replace him because they haven't been as good as when Jim was here. So that's something to pay attention to, too, as an evaluator of their team. It's interesting. They looked bad last night, and they've lost seven straight games. They've got one loser point in a game at Nashville. That's it, Mitch, in the last seven. And here's the thing. Starting last night, 10 of their next 11 games. 10 of their next 11. Sorry, I'm misspeaking. They've got, four straight on the road. Five of six, four straight on the road coming up. And it's brutal. It's all four-point games. It's in Anaheim. It's in L.A. It's in San Jose. I mean, they're hard games. They're hard, hard, hard games.
For those,
Season's on the line. Their season's on the line right now.
So for those who might have missed it, here's just a small portion of what Mike Yeo, their head coach, had to say after the loss last night.
It's a matter of pride as far as I'm concerned about not – you give up eight goals. Come on. We've given up, 16 in the last three games. We've always been one of the top defensive teams. The turnovers that we have and the lack of respect that we have for our goaltenders and for the game of hockey – that's ridiculous, and we have guys that aren't scoring and aren't contributing offensively and are not showing nearly enough as far as what they want to bring to the table in terms of playing for their teammates and defending and being hard to play against.
He went on to basically name guys whose game he liked and most guys he didn't like. It was not Therrien-like after the infamous meltdown. But it was pretty close.
It was definitely close. And he's teetering because they were counting on this team to make it. And at the beginning of the year, if you remember the first 15 games of the year, you'd have to look at the numbers up. I don't remember them fresh off the top of my head. But the first 15 games of the season, they're probably the best team in the league. They really were. I was in here probably two or three times at the beginning of the year. They were pile-driving teams. They weren't just beating teams. They were beating teams up, and they were pile-driving them on the scoreboard. That's not happening anymore. That's a problem. And, they were counting on this team being really good and going for a long run. And a lot of people thought they had the best defense in the NHL. They haven't had Joel Edmondson for a while. He skated this morning, which is good news for them. But they were counting on, obviously, Bo Misha. They were counting on Pietrangelo. They were counting on Colton Parayko. They were counting on Carl Gunnarsson. They were counting on Robert Bortuzzo, breaking in a young kid in Vince Dunn. They were counting on them having the best defense in the league. And at the beginning of the year, they did. They don't have that anymore. They don't have it. They don't have that best defense. You just heard the coach talk about it.
And at some point, you'd think they throw in the towel on Jake Allen and left there's some kind of miraculous recovery here over
where
the next month.
Where are they going
to go? Yeah, well.
They can't bring Marty Brodeur out of the booth. He's done.
Let me ask you mentioned very quickly the Nashville-Winnipeg game. I know you saw it, Gallo. Roman Josi set up five of their six goals.
He's good.
Is he a Norris Trophy winner?
He's in the hunt. He's definitely in the hunt. Doughty's in the hunt. He's in the hunt. Subban's in the hunt. Those guys are all in the hunt. At the beginning of the year, Pietrangelo was in the hunt too. He's not in the hunt anymore. So he's definitely in the hunt. He's had a phenomenal year. The guy, remember we talked about Ryan Hartman yesterday and I told you he might have been the steal of the trade deadline. That guy's going to make a major impact on that team. He did already in game one.
He scored the game-winning goal with a minute to go.
Yeah, he's going to be a major impact player. It shows you the value of knowing the league, knowing your team, knowing how to team build, and knowing the players intimately around the league. I give their pro scouts a ton of credit. Those guys recognize this player can come to our team, be an amazing support player, can play with upper echelon players because he did in Chicago. He wasn't intimidated. And he's going to make a mark every time he's on the ice. He's a vicious forechecker, really vicious on the forecheck. That was really brilliant pro scouting by them.
Yeah, watching that game, it really had a big game feel to it. It felt like these two teams know that likely they're going to cross paths in the playoffs. And I'm just wondering, Pierre, Connor Hellebuck, a guy who's kind of untested come playoff time, do you think that's a bit of a concern because he didn't give them a big save when they needed one?
That's a great point. I think that's one of the tipping points in the series if they ever played would be Pekka Rinne versus Connor Hellebuck. I think Pekka obviously gets a little bit of the advantage, especially with his puck handling, so we'll see on that. The other thing is, if they do play each other,
whomever gets home ice, that's going to matter a ton in that series. Because Nashville can be a house of horrors for anybody that goes in there, and Winnipeg's not a shrinking violet city when it comes to hockey fans. They're as good as there are in the league. So that's going to be interesting to watch, really interesting. But it would behoove either one of those teams to get home ice if they're going to play one another.
Final one for Pierre McGuire, 90 minutes away from puck drop here, Canadians and Islanders at the Bell Center. For those who may have missed what you had to say about him following the trade deadline, Pierre, as I mentioned, Mike Riley making his Habs debut on the third pairing with Jordy Benn. Who and what are Canadians fans going to see from Mike Riley?
Mike can really skate. He'll try to be physical. He's not a small guy. He'll try to be physical. What's the best way to describe Mike? He's going to have to get confidence early in a game. If Mike gets comfortable and confident early in a game, you'll see him start to make really good elite plays. If he's struggling with his confidence, he won't be as good as he can be. He never really was able to establish himself with the Minnesota Wild like he was when he played at the University of Minnesota, where he was very, very good. So I think confidence is a big part of the game for him. And I can tell you, when he was coming out of college, he was a highly sought-after commodity, a highly sought-after one, and a big reason why was his skating ability.
Good to hear you're back in an NHL rink at St. Louis tonight, Pierre. Thanks an awful lot. We'll talk to you about it tomorrow.
I look forward to that as well, Mitch. Take care. Have a good night, everybody.